trying to just figure out some last-minute stuff. We have one bill on the agenda, House File 826. Now, as members know, we heard this bill extensively last year in the Finance Committee, and members will recall it passed out of committee to the floor of the Senate and then simply ran out of time on the floor. So under the rules, you know, obviously the bill came back to the last committee of jurisdiction. Members will also recall, however, that before the bill was heard in the Finance Committee again this year, the bill was on the floor re-referred to the Education Committee, where there was an opportunity to try to work on the bill fairly extensively. So, Senator Dibble, my thought was, depending on how you feel about this, that we're obviously hearing the same bill, but with some significant changes. My suggestion would be, and it's your bill, you can determine what you'd like to do with it, and folks in the audience should understand that when a bill has been heard in the Policy Committee, we normally don't have testimony on a bill in the full Finance Committee unless there are particular questions or that would call for testimony from somebody or members of the committee would like to ask for testimony from individuals. So I don't have anybody on a witness list. So, Senator Dibble, what I'd like to suggest is obviously maybe refresh the committee on the thrust of the bill, but spend a few minutes talking about what you've done with the bill in the Education Committee and what the changes are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, House File 826, Safe and Supportive Minnesota Schools Act, has gone through the process that you just described. In terms of very, very broad brushstrokes, just as a reminder, what the bill intends to accomplish is to establish an atmosphere in schools, a set of policies in schools that allow for a better response to bullying, better prevention through a number of means, primarily through the mechanism of a comprehensive anti-bullying policy that would be adopted at the district and school level that would have a number of key features, including an opportunity for staff to receive an adequate level of training so that they recognize bullying when they see it, that they respond in a timely fashion and can discern between the actor and the target of bullying, communicate clearly a set of expectations, and that parents and teachers and others can have around how bullying, incidents of bullying will be responded to, and additionally give schools the opportunity to engage in prevention practices of their own determination so that we can get to a point at which incidents of bullying decrease significantly over time. Of course, the reason for this bill is because we know that bullying occurs in far too large numbers, that it has real consequence in young people's lives, both immediate and long-term, and research is growing around very effective tools for effective response designed to change the behavior, not focused on punishment necessarily, but on effective response, and to prevent over time the incidents. Mr. Chair and members, in the time since on the table on the Senate floor last year and today, we had the opportunity to go back over the bill and button up some details, some intelligent thoughts and ideas that were brought forward from various stakeholders and interests, particularly those who run the schools. And they're all good suggestions, and we made a couple of somewhat significant changes and some other minor changes, clarification. I'll just run through those very, very quickly. Concern was raised about whether volunteers need to receive a full battery of training. That was never intended, so we just clarified some language around that and just suggested that schools determine for themselves the role and responsibility of volunteers, and then references to volunteers are eliminated in the remainder of the bill. how exactly policies would be communicated, just simply on websites and in the formats and languages that they already determine for other similar types of communication. Again, on the topic of communication, the physical posting of policies would only be done in summary form, only in the offices of the school and or the district. There was a lot of effort. Everyone agrees that it's important probably to keep track of incidents and analyze those incidents over time to figure out if practices and responses and what we're doing is effective or not, and making a difference in kids' lives for the better over time, but we couldn't figure out exactly how to do that in real practical terms. And so all those requirements are taken out and left entirely to the districts. We do ask the Climate Council that will work in conjunction with the Climate Center to take on the task of figuring that out and bringing forward an idea around that. And that, of course, the Climate Council is comprised of all the folks that I just mentioned who have been a part of this conversation over the last year. So they're the right folks to think about how maybe to approach that subject. The definition of bullying was changed in a way that just makes it more consistent with how the professional organizations, researchers, other schools existing policies, Department of Justice as well, has a definition with which this is consistent. Specifically, the idea of identifying bullying in terms of pattern of behavior, repetition of incidents, and also identifying bullying in terms of imbalance of power between the actor and the target. There was some concern about, of course, special ed. We know that these individual education plans entail a great deal of mandates and paperwork and just a lot of work. And at one time we had a requirement that kids with disabilities or special needs might not be appropriately dealt with in the same fashion that the rest of the student population is, whether they're actor or target, that they might need some individualized response to take care of them if they've been a target or to change their behavior if they're an actor. And we had a requirement that that be folded into the IEP plan or the 504 plan. We make that permissive now, which is the suggestion. There was an issue around dealing with bullying when it occurs between students of different schools. It had been confined to just bullying incidents between students in the same school, but of course the circumstance was brought up where schools are often co-located in the same building. Athletic teams are comprised of team members from different schools, so we needed to figure out how to make sure that bullying provisions against bullying behavior apply in those instances as well. Policies, of course, any policy needs to be reviewed from time to time. We'd ask that bullying policies be reviewed on an annual basis. We just simply say that any policy that's established simply be reviewed on any normal cycle that the school district has established for itself. There was a provision that should have been dropped, but it was mistakenly left in, and it had to do with the Department of Education developing rules and guidance, and that's dropped entirely. A significant concern, again, just a grammatical issue about investigations into incidences having to be concluded in 3 days. They simply have to be initiated within 3 days. There's some language later in the bill that had been around the allowable use of staff development dollars and required outcomes for staff development. That's existing language. We had amended around that activity in schools. We just dropped that and consolidated some of that language into earlier part of the bill where we talk about training for personnel in schools. Also, similarly, there's some language later in the bill around developing policies for online activities at school. That's been dealt with in another part of the law in previous policies, so that was dropped. There have been, I guess I won't get into changes that had been made along the way last year that were in the bill as it was laid on the table on the Senate floor. Oh, one I didn't mention, the members of the Climate Committee, the Climate Council, were changed slightly. The Board of Teaching and the Board of Administrators were dropped, but the Association of School Administrators was added, so it goes down from 24 members to 23. that's the extent of the changes, Mr. Chair. I know that there are some changes to the fiscal implication because, of course, we had appropriated some dollars for the establishment of the Climate Center. A year has passed and no money has been spent in this biennium, in this biennium. So.
Okay, thank you, Senator Dibble. Before we take questions and discussion, maybe I could ask Mr. Nauman to comment on where we are relative to the fiscal impact of the legislation in front of us.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd be pleased to. So, members, I'll call your attention to the fiscal note, number H, House File 826, the second unofficial engrossment. This was the fiscal note that was prepared just prior to the bill being amended in the Education Policy Committee. So there are a couple of changes that change the numbers a little bit relative to the bill was amended in the Policy Committee and took out at least one cost item. And if members would flip on the fiscal note to page 4 with the chart, some of the section numbers don't crosswalk any longer, and I'd be happy to highlight those for you if it's necessary, but I'll just point out now that on the chart, the item that with a $30,000 cost in 15 and $3,000 ongoing in 16 and 17, labeled Section 2 Modification Maintenance to DIRS, was removed in the Policy Committee. So that takes $30,000 of cost out of the fiscal note in fiscal 15 and an ongoing $3,000 of cost. So if you now crosswalk that back to the first page, in fiscal 14 and 15, the fiscal note is labeling $1,038,000 of cost, in the current biennium and an ongoing cost of $980,000. The K-12 bill last year appropriated $500,000 in fiscal 14 and $500,000 in 15. There was no language to speak about carry forward, but at the time the K-12 bill was passed, it was assumed that this bill would be passed and that appropriation would carry the cost burden. The issue is 14. So in fiscal 14, there's that $500,000, which has not been used because the School Climate Center has not been established. We've had some conversations, and we believe that that money would be available for carry forward under general law in 16A. So arguably, we have $1 million of appropriation that could be used for the costs associated with this bill. On an ongoing basis, assuming that the legislature would appropriate the base amount, which would be $500,000, that would cover $500,000 of the ongoing $980,000 that's flagged in this fiscal note.
Okay, thank you. And Sir Nino.
Thank you. Mr. Nauman, that $1 million was earmarked for creation of the Climate Center. If we use it to pay for this bill, what about the creation of the Climate Center then?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Dino, I mean, I think that's an excellent point. We've had some conversations with MMB and the Department of Education. Yes, it's flagged for the cost associated with the School Climate Center, and some of the costs identified in the fiscal note are measured relative to the department itself. Some additional education specialists are flagged in the fiscal note. And I think that's a relevant issue to probe a little bit. I'm just suggesting that there's resources of $1 million for the School Climate Center. I think that it'd be up to the department to figure out how to work through some of that. The legislature, in its wisdom, thought $500,000 for the Climate Center was an ongoing number. And I believe the Climate Center itself, on an ongoing basis, has about $600,000 of cost.
Sir Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want the committee to be aware that we can only spend those dollars one time, one way, and we can't have them both with the same dollars.
Yeah, and Sir Nino, with what we've done is, with the changes that have been made in the bill over this past month, we've been tracking where the dollars are. And so within the context of a proposed supplemental finance bill from the Senate, we've made sure that the dollars are tracking. Obviously, if this Senate chooses to not pass this legislation, we would back those dollars out from our tracking sheets. The other thing is that obviously because this has some cross jurisdictions, the best guess this year is it will not necessarily be carried in the supplemental finance bill, but probably carried, the money will probably be carried in this bill itself. But we're tracking where the dollars are. Mr. Nauman has been very, very careful in terms of watching not only this bill, but the handful of other bills that are coming through that have some ancillary costs to it. So if we find something happens during the course of this meeting or on the floor of the Senate, if the bill gets there, we'll make the necessary adjustments in terms of the overall budget picture. Sarah Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nauman, on page 3, under assumptions, paragraph 2, there is a statement that says there are local district and school building requirements that may fiscally impact schools. Could you help me understand a little bit better what those requirements are to local school districts and how much money are we talking about?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I think what I can tell you is that there was a local impact note that was prepared on this bill, and of course that comes with the benefits and shortcomings of the local impact note process. Those cost items are measured with surveys to local units of government. I don't believe that we have it in the packet today, but what I. So I don't recall exactly. You cut me a little bit short on that, point. But the bill itself identifies a series of requirements that school districts have to accomplish, and those carry costs with them. And I think that that's what the local impact note was attempting to measure. Unfortunately, I'm not in a position to have at my command the exact costs that were measured.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nauman, I apologize. I did not mean to catch you flat-footed. Perhaps you could take some time after we're done today and provide that information to me. I am concerned about the cost to local school districts. So, and you don't have to do it now, but if you would provide that to me, I would appreciate it very much. So,
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I think it's an appropriate question. I just remind members that we feel quite a bit more comfortable with the pricing process of the fiscal note and revenue note process for the costs of state government. The local impact note has a series of benefits in that it attempts to measure how costs are passed on by what we do here to local units of government, but of course how local governments respond to survey questions asked to them by the MMB department to identify these costs that they may have are responded to differently. So we have less confidence with how those prices are measured, and you get issues like sampling, who has responded, who hasn't responded, and how those prices get aggregated. So I just wanted to take the opportunity of your question to say, yes, there is a local impact note on this bill. I will make sure that it gets put into your hands and anyone else, maybe just to the committee generally. But it comes with some cautionary note.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Newman.
Mr. Nauman, thank you very much for that. And I appreciate whatever information that you can provide to us, but very much sounds like in terms of the fiscal note that we are looking at here to do today and entertaining passage of this bill, it very much sounds like we really don't know what the fiscal impact to our local schools is going to be. Is that accurate?
Well, Senator Newman, I think Mr. Newman's made it clear that when we established the local fiscal note process, our problem is we don't have control over those jurisdictions. We have control over MMB. We have control over the Department of Revenue. We can make demands on those agencies relative to our legislative process. A little bit tougher for us to do that with every school district in the state of Minnesota. We can direct the agencies to obtain that information and help promulgate a local fiscal note, but we can take it just so far, whether it be this legislation or any other legislation. My experience has been there's always some element of guesswork with the local fiscal notes just because we don't have control over those jurisdictions. We can't go to School District X and say, hey, get all the information to us so we can put together a fiscal note. And School District X says, we got better things to do. Now, as to how that impacts our decision as a committee, that's up for each up to each committee member. But I don't think we're ever going to see a perfect local fiscal note process.
Mr. Chairman,
I understand that, and I appreciate what both you and Mr. Nauman are saying. But there are rumors out there that are just rampant as to what the cost of this is going to be to our local school districts. And I think you are correct that we don't have any control over a lot of that local impact. But the bottom line is that, you know, we are entertaining a bill here that at least in some degree is going to impact our local school districts, and I think that we should be concerned about that. That's the only reason I'm bringing this up.
And Sarah Newman, I don't disagree with that. And with the appropriateness of this committee raising questions about the impact, I'm just suggesting at least insofar as the process is concerned that we're not necessarily going to have as accurate an answer as we might with what we have under our direct jurisdiction. But I'm not suggesting that we ignore the issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I have a copy of the local impact note here. It shows about $20 million in cost. And if someone made copies, we would like it handed out.
Okay.
Because it is, as much as you are calling out the questions of the local impact note, it's all we have right now.
Okay.
And it is what we have.
Well, why don't we have copies made? Take some other questions. We'll come back to you, Senator Fischbach, once that's ready for distribution.
I just wanted to make sure that everybody had that, Mr. Chair, as the conversation continues.
We'll make sure it's as soon as we get the copies. Sarah Nino.
Per year, it's 2 years.
Sarah Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad that Senator Fischbach is having that handed out. I was just going to give you the numbers and the history on that local impact note. The members probably don't remember, but I did give a copy. There are actually two of them that were done. And I did give a copy to every member of the Senate on the Senate floor because I wanted senators to be aware of what that local impact note said. You might recall that this was before the full Senate at one point. there were actually two of them that were done, and Senator Dibble, I'm sure, will attest to this. The first one came out with roughly a $50 million cost over 2 years, and Senator Dibble objected to that and went back to the MMB and said, I think you're wrong. And MMB went back and revisited and did recalculate and came back with a little lower number at about $40 million. So this local impact note, to the extent that there's some question, it has been visited and revisited twice by our professionals, and I think it would be a little unfair to MMB to say that they've looked at this now multiple times, but there's a whole lot of question, and really maybe it doesn't cost that much. I think we need to go with what we have to go with, and we've had these debates about fiscal notes and et cetera, so we don't do dynamic scoring and yada, yada, yada. But we have to go with what we have to go with, and I think that's the best we have, and I think we shouldn't delegitimize those numbers, particularly when they've been visited and revisited again. When you get that copy in front of you, the actual number will be about $39 million over 2 years as a cost unfunded mandate to our local schools. And for those that remember what we did in K-12, there's Senator Wieger's not here because K-12 is meeting right now, actually. That is a very significant portion of the amount of money we added to the K-12 funding base last budget. This is not an insignificant amount of money, not an insignificant hit to our local school budgets. And on top of that, now we see the $2 million cost. Those are items for this committee to consider, to vote yes or vote no, depending on what you feel. But again, we need to go in, as I've said before, eyes wide open, Mr. Chair, and knowing what we are doing here.
Sir Nino, I don't want to suggest that we gloss over a local fiscal note. My comment, and in supplement to Mr. Nauman's comment, is just that we tend to see less detail. I'm not in any way suggesting that we ignore the information that we do have. It's like anything else. We can have it in front of us. We can raise questions about it, ask questions about it. So I don't think anybody should misunderstand or misconstrue these comments that suggest that we don't try to pay attention. My only comment is that we tend to get less detail, and you know, we can get somebody from MMB up there to say how'd you put this thing together? You know, we can't get local folks here. We have to depend on the information. And the moment we get the copies back, we'll have them distributed immediately and can use that as a takeoff for discussion on the local impact. Senator Engelbrechtson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to go back a short distance here in the questions to Mr. Nauman's comment about the appropriation of money last year before we actually passed the bill. How often do we do that, Senator? Do we assume that bills are going to be passed and those appropriations? And I don't question 1 second that he's watching the dollars and where they're going. I don't question that at all. And I assume they're still there to fund this bill should it pass. How often do we do that?
It's rare, but sometimes in the process, if you have a bill moving independently, we will track it. And we will sometimes assume a bill is going to pass. And then we will book that number. But it's not officially booked in the budget until it actually passes the Senate. And in terms of the Senate Finance Committee, we don't book something until it passes the Finance Committee. So let me give you an example that has nothing to do with this. But the other day we dealt with the legislation of Senator Scoia and to a lesser extent myself relative to the budget reserve. And as you'll recall, we talked about a figure of $150 million. That figure is now being used in putting together the overall Senate budget because it's passed the Finance Committee. Prior to us doing that, we assumed that might be the figure, but it wasn't absolutely a figure we were using. But we try to track what's going on so we're not caught by surprise and find we're short money. Let's use a bigger example, supplemental finance bill. Let's say that just collapses on the Senate floor. We will have tried to track the money as it leaves this committee, but it just collapses on the Senate floor. We adjourn. We don't pass a bill. Money simply falls into the bottom line.
So, Mr. Chair, this money had fallen to the bottom line, being this bill didn't pass then. Is that correct?
Well, Mr. Nauman,
was there an appropriation?
Yeah, because we had passed the K-12 bill, and so there was money in that bill.
For this bill.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the nature of the process is that, remember, this bill was on the Senate floor the last day of the session. We had already passed the K-12 bill. I forget when we got the conference committee report from that conference committee and when that passed. But we had already passed that. So that'll happen in the process. But again, fiscal staff does a very good job of keeping track of where everything is in conjunction with MMB.
So then, Mr. Chair, this is unlike the supplemental budget bill you just referred to, that the bottom line, everything falls to the bottom line if it's not passed, if it falls in at the last minute. Mm-hmm. This one actually did move forward.
Yes.
My other question is, Senator Cohen, you said that local impacts had nothing really, I mean, we have no control of that. In Section 9, we actually require the way I understand it and look at the bill, that the state of Minnesota could actually come down with sanctions on school districts should they not abide by the mandate from the state. I mean, that's a direct influence on financial for the school districts, it seems to me.
Hey, Senator Ingerson, you misunderstood me. Possibly. I was not suggesting that there aren't sanctions for state mandates or the state doesn't have control. What I suggested was only in the context of our fiscal process and our fiscal note process, we have less control over the promulgation of a local fiscal note than we do a state fiscal note. That's totally separate, I would suggest, from what we do or we don't do relative to local governments, whether it be a school district, a city, a county, a township. You bet we have, we've exercised jurisdiction over them. My comment was only on the fiscal process.
Just one final comment for now, if I could, Mr. Chair. So with that and Senator Fischbach getting the numbers passed out here, I assume there's going to be some discussion as to how, in fact, this is paid for. We can call it unfunded mandate, whatever, but I understand that there's a mechanism in place where actually the school boards have the authority to through levy taxes to local taxpayers to pay for this, and in fact, this would then, that's exactly how it would be paid for locally, and that would be a local decision?
Sir Inverson, I won't comment on that. I mean, we'll get the local fiscal note and can then have that discussion. We've got something in front of us, what I would suggest. I'm not sure to do. Ms. Kaplan just indicated to me that we're still waiting to get the copies of that local fiscal note. Thought we'd have it by now. But other comments, questions, otherwise?
Ms. Chair?
Senator Limmer.
Ms. Chair, if we're not going to recognize a possible funding mechanism through the local school districts, should we assume that this bill in its current form does not have a funding mechanism? Or will it be an unfunded mandate?
Senator Limmer, I'm not sure I can answer that. You will have to, let's take a look at the local fiscal note. Members of the committee can make their own judgment relative to that. But I'm flattered you'd want me to make that judgment for you, and I'd be happy to do so, but I don't think that's what your question was.
I've learned, Mr. Chairman, to come to you on all financial matters. All.
Yeah, but you reach the wrong conclusions once you come to me. That's what disappoints me.
That's called bad advice, Mr. Chair. Okay. Mr. Chair, I do have a question of the author, if I could.
So we're having distributed the fiscal note, but Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah, with regards, and maybe it's better directed to Mr. Nauman, but page 3, when we talk about, again, what the cost of this is, when we created this 24-member council, is there anything in here, and I perused it fairly in-depth, is there any in here, place in here as to how we pay for these members, their travel, their per diems, that type of thing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I've been, if you look at line 12.31 of the bill itself on page 12, Mr. Bonham points out to me that council members are not eligible for compensation or reimbursement for expenses related to council activities. Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think that's a fair assessment. I think I would amplify that, or at least clarify that. I think we're talking about this conversation has been fairly free-ranging. The fiscal note measures the costs on state government, and that's the fiscal note process. I know that the local impact note is now being handed out, and that's going to be an attempt to measure the effect on the local school districts.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up and clarify with Senator Limmer's question. You didn't, and this is not a judgment statement, you didn't want to answer his question, but I will attempt to do that. Senator Limmer, you now have a copy of the local impact statement that shows upwards of $40 million of local cost. And for the clarity of those that are in the room and maybe watching on TV or listening, there is no funding in this bill to cover that $40 million of cost. This bill provides no mechanism to cover that local cost. That is by definition a mandate that has a cost that is unfunded. We call that an unfunded mandate. So, yes, that is what this bill does.
You know, Senator Nino, I think we all have copies now of the MMV local fiscal note. Let me, if I might, just quote a couple of sections. And happy to have the discussion, but on page 2, it says, it was noted that a number of the provisions impacting local school districts are required under current law in Minnesota Statute 121A. relating to a policy on sexual, religious, and racial harassment and violence. And therefore, some costs reported by local districts in survey responses may reflect current costs rather than new costs required by the proposed legislation. There's also, on page 5, limitations of local impact note analysis. While MMV is responsible for calculating a statewide local impact and local impact notes, it is important to remember that the totals are estimates, and as such, local impact notes are advisory in nature. In the case of SF-783, there are a number of factors that limit the precision of the total statewide local fiscal impact, which makes my point, not that we take this with a grain of salt, but that there's always a different kind of context. So I'm not going to toss it back to you and say, well, look at page 2 in terms of a duplication of fiscal concerns, because that'd be obviously unfair to yourself to suggest you'd have that. But it just suggests a limitation on the process. And so recognize that fiscal note that talks about a statewide impact, but, you know, as it indicates here, it's advisory. Cernino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are valid points, but if your argument is that because of the, and I think this is a technical term, squishiness of the process, that this local impact statement is off by a factor of 2, and really it's only half the cost, we still have a $20 million unfunded mandate.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the local fiscal impact note that we were just handed out is dated May 1st, 2013. And I believe, but I'm not sure, that the bill has changed somewhat since last year when we last saw it. Is the fiscal note dated May 1st, 2013 from Minnesota Management and Budget the latest, most up-to-date information that we have from MMB for us to consider in this committee?
In terms of a local fiscal note?
Yes, Mr. Correct? Chairman.
Mr. Allen, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nino, the traditional fiscal I'm sorry, Senator Newman. Sorry, my apologies.
Mr. Newman.
Too many N's in my life. It is the most recent local impact note. The traditional fiscal note process accommodates revisions and updates as the legislation proceeds much more nimbly than the local impact note does, because it requires surveys. I've been advised that some of the provisions that were priced in some of the charts in the local impact note do not reflect the most up-to-date data. Whether that increases the price or lowers the price, I'm not yet conversant with it to speak to that point.
But Mr. Chairman, Mr. Now, too many N's in my life, too, Mr. Nauman. In terms of what we have available to us as committee members in writing from MMB, this is the fiscal note, May 1st, 2013. It is the most up-to-date, accurate information that we have in writing from MMB, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, yes.
Thank you.
Senator Westrom.
Chair, just a couple of questions maybe for the author. Senator Dibble, it talks about the school. Can you explain to us just how this policy is going to be implemented with technology, because it talks about electronic bullying on property, but also that might have effect off-site. Can you just talk to us about that? Because I'm interested in that and how far-reaching it is, because it ultimately will have a cost or an effect to either the state to reimburse school districts for that, or local school districts. But can you tell us, so we get a better understanding of how what we're requiring and how they're going to implement such a broad sweeping, or what appears to be kind of broad sweeping responsibility for electronic type bullying.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Senator Westrom, I would disagree with the characterization of broad and sweeping. The policy applies when there's disruption in school function and activity, or the ability for a student to be able to access and enjoy their own education. And so when that occurs through electronic means, that connection or that nexus needs to be demonstrated. So it would not, for example, I guess a good example would be, typically in the summertime, when students are gone from school for 2.5 or 3 months, and they're communicating with each other through electronic means, there wouldn't be a requirement for school districts, schools and school administrators and personnel to know about or intervene in that instance. It's just simply an attempt to recognize that sometimes the bullying behavior, which is defined here fairly clearly and pretty straightforward, when it occurs both through personal face-to-face interaction, or if it occurs through communication via technology.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, you sort of described when it wouldn't apply, but can you give us some examples of how or when it would apply? It would be during the school year, so we're talking generally September through May or early June, but evenings, weekends, as well. Can you talk us through how that policy is going to work and what the responsibilities will be for the school district? It's easy if it's from one cell phone to the other during noon hour at the school on the school grounds. That's probably the other end of obviousness. But can you tell us when it does apply during the school year?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I'll just refer members, I'll draw members' attention to lines 2.1 through 2.19. Scope and application applies to bullying by a student against another student enrolled in a public school, which occurs on the school premises, at school functions or activities, or on the school transportation, number one. Number two, by use of electronic technology and communications on the school premises, during school functions or activities, on school transportation, or on school computers, networks, forums, and mailing lists. Or three, by use of electronic technology and communications off the school premises, to the extent such use substantially and materially disrupts student learning or the school environment.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, that last one is the one I'm asking for clearer understanding, and our school districts, my school districts at least, have raised that concern about extending their oversight and duties to being off-site as well. It's new ground potentially we're plowing here, and how do you envision that being implemented or affecting our schools?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, I don't think it's new ground. I think if something occurs off-site that then rolls into the school in some form or fashion, I think the authority of schools to engage in those instances has already been present. I think what's key is to focus on the words, to the extent such use substantially and materially disrupts student learning or the school environment. So there needs to be a demonstration that there has been an impact and effect, on the school itself, to trigger some ability for school personnel, school authorities to respond.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, I don't know that that gives me any more compelling clear insight to go back to my school administrators and give them a better feeling for it, but I will move on.
Mr. Chair, I mean, we do have Roger Aronson, who often helps me answer these kinds of questions. He's kind of, I don't know if he's here. So, and this language comes forward with the advice and assistance of fine minds like Mr. Aronson, who helps run schools. I'll just go back to there needs to be a demonstration of substantial material disruption at the schools. Otherwise, it's occurring off school premises, and school authorities don't have jurisdiction or ability to respond.
Mr. Aronson, did you wish to respond?
Mr. Chair and members, I think what Senator Dibbles told you is
exactly. You might just identify yourself.
I'm Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principal Associations, and I think Senator Westrom's question is a good one. I think what Senator Dibbles told you is absolutely right. If you wanted to convert it to just layperson's language, what this says is things that spill over into the school will be within the disciplinary jurisdiction of the school. And when Senator Dibble says that's not a change, he's absolutely right. I mean, that happens now. Geography is kind of a complicated deal, and timing is kind of a complicated deal. We work these things out, but when things come into school and that are related to these types of behaviors, they may have happened on Saturday night, but it may have an impact on the school, and that's the connection here. That's the link. So we do this now rather routinely. If you look at student discipline in Minnesota, we do 65,000 suspensions a year, and we're pretty confident in how we do those. And a lot of those involve the conduct that Senator Dibbles referred to and that Senator Westrom's asked about. So I think that's going to work.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, to the witness, the suspensions you do now, how many of them are from conduct outside of the school hours? And how many would you say are during school? I'm more familiar with suspensions happening because of conduct during school. I'm not as familiar with suspensions happening because of what happened Sunday morning. Can you enlighten us on that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, not to take up a lot of your time on this, but I can't answer the number piece, but it wouldn't surprise any of you to say that if you start on athletic eligibility, if you're doing alcohol over a weekend, doesn't matter that it wasn't during school hours, you're going to have a discipline consequence of that. If you send emails to or Facebook pieces online that say, I'm going to beat the snot out of you at school on Tuesday, you're not going to be exempt from our disciplinary reach by the virtue of the fact that you wrote that on Saturday night. If it comes into the school and has some impact, then we're going to talk about it. And if school administrators were here, they would tell you that it is typical practice these days that Monday morning parents will come in with a string of Facebook issues, et cetera, where kids have said mean things back and forth to one another, and they expect the school to deal with it. How do we do that? We do deal with it. We talk to the kids and say, don't do bad things while you're here following up on these particular threats. But you're right to suggest, on the other hand, that there are some things that are exclusively outside of our jurisdiction. So that line is kind of mushy. But this bill, and this is why I think you're right asking the question, Senator Dibble's right answering the question, this bill does not change the current line that deals with these at all.
Something I should have mentioned earlier, we had an expression to the extent such use is reasonably foreseeable to or does substantially and materially, and we took out the reasonably foreseeable. That left a level of vagueness that I was uncomfortable with and others were as well. An example would be a fight Saturday night that occurred and everyone made up on Sunday and everyone's happy as a clam on Monday. That's the end of it.
Senator Anderson.
So, Mr. Chair, I wasn't done.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Westrom. Oh. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for those answers. Another part of the bill talks about anonymous reporting. Can you just tell us, is there also a disincentive to make false reports so we don't have a reverse bullying going on or a reverse strategy of getting back at somebody by running them through a false anonymous accusation?
So, Mr. Chair, so the anonymous reporting, I think, is a measured idea in that it allows for a young person or someone to say, you know, teacher, something's going on in the hall outside your classroom on a regular basis, and perhaps you should step outside your room and figure out what's happening. And, you know, perhaps that young person really fears having their name. So maybe they've passed a note or whatever to the teacher to say, this is going on outside your classroom in the hall. You need to get some eyes on the situation. And it allows for that to occur. They can't pass the note to the teacher saying, you know, Joe is bullying Bill, and then Joe somehow is then subject to some sort of sanction without the teacher, either the person passing the note stepping up to be able to attest to that, or the teacher themselves, you know, and I think this is true in all cases, or whomever actually seeing and understanding what was going on. In terms of the second part of your question, Senator Westrum, you know, I think that all comes out in the process of investigation and figuring out what exactly is going on. You know, through the process of figuring out what's going on, you know, ideally the truth comes out. And I also just need to refocus members just a little bit. This bill is not built around the idea of sanction, consequence, punishment, punitive measures. It's quite the opposite. It's around changing the behavior, adopting remedial strategies, and ideally dealing with things when they're occurring at a lower level of seriousness. So a wise word can be given to a kid who's perhaps engaging in this behavior to help them better understand the consequence of their words and their actions on other people. That's often what the problem is. It's just young people who lack the ability to understand because they haven't had the opportunity to appreciate what's going on when they say things to other people or, you know, target them in certain ways. And that kind of early intervention, short of consequence, punishment, punitive measures, is really the most effective strategy.
All right, thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dibble, or your testifier, Mr. Aronson, Mr. Aronson mentioned something about like 66 or something thousand suspensions a year. Do you have was it discussed in education what the cost of to the school districts is regarding suspensions? What does it cost the school to lose a student for 3 days? Per pupil funding, does that stop at the time that the person is kicked out of school or suspended? And where does that go with the fact is that with this bill here, if the person is suspended or kicked out of school, what's going to be the cost of that student not being – what's it going to be cost to the school district for losing the money from the state? Or does the state just overlook that just because they're suspended and just keep funding the school with the per pupil funding?
Senator Dibble or Mr. Aronson, if you can answer that.
I'm fairly certain there is no loss of per pupil aid in the event of a suspension. I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, students are the districts continue to receive the funding. If a child was gone for more than 15 days, they'd be dropped from the rolls. But if you play that all the way out, even if we expel the child, under Minnesota law, the way this works, the district has an ongoing obligation to provide educational services to the child, even if they were, quote, expelled under this statute. And if those services were still provided by the district, they'd continue to get the aid. So I don't think that's a factor in this at all, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, according to the from MMB, it looks like non-metro districts, which would be one of mine or all of mine, the cost per pupil would be about $33 a student, and just for one of my school districts, it's $165,000. It's going to cost just one school district, and I have six or eight somewhere in there. So the money that is going to be required to put this in place will be an ongoing yearly deal, and that is going to be up to the local school districts. Is that correct, Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, I did want to respond to the earlier question with another thought, which is I'd like members to just to contemplate the fact that literally thousands and thousands of young people in our state today stay home from school because they're afraid to go to school because of how they're treated there, and no one responds to them. So I wouldn't – this bill isn't going to result in a bunch of suspensions, quite the opposite. That's not the focus of this bill. But it will allow a lot of kids to attend school who right now are staying home one or more days a week, sometimes to the point of being truant, and in many, many cases changing schools with some frequency because they're not being treated well. To answer your question, the fiscal note, I don't want to get too deeply into criticizing the local impact note, you know, I do think that the methodology of the fiscal note was deeply flawed. It was the result of what a survey monkey that was sent out to districts, districts kind of self-selected, so it wasn't really even scientific in that fashion. I think the construction of a lot of the questions were poor. A lot of the activities were combined into one activity where they should have been separated out. It didn't recognize costs that are already accounted for. I think that's one of the qualifications articulated in the kind of the second pass of the note. Costs around, we already have in many instances a person in the building who's in charge of these sorts of things. We're already doing quite a bit of training, undertaking, some of the disciplinary activities that might occur. There is the local levy matter, the expansion of the, say, school's local levy that was expanded, its purpose and its amount. We did give a lot of money to districts last year per pupil formula. There are a lot of changes to this bill, the tracking and data collection and management, and some of the other smaller changes bring the cost down to some degree. like I said, I think there are tremendous improved outcomes for schools that will allow them to realize some gains if they're doing this work well. Kids not transferring out of their schools, better educational outcomes, healthier kids, lowered exposure to liability for failure to keep kids safe. And that's not an abstraction. A number of schools have been exposed to significant liability. It's debatable exactly what the local cost will be. I just don't think this local impact note is the final word on that.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Dibble, what I'm hearing you say is this fiscal note is flawed, and so I'm taking that this bill is not ready for prime time yet because we don't know the cost to our school districts statewide.
Senator Engelbrightson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, was it Mr. Arneson that was here before? Still here. If I could ask him one question. Thank you, and I think you're quite familiar with the bill. So I'm referring to Section 9, and that's the ability for the state of Minnesota to pull per pupil dollars. I think that's the section. Well, that's what I'm talking about anyhow. Your association, have they had long discussions about this, and how do they feel about the state of Minnesota having the ability to do that? Do you see it cumbersome? Do you see the setting up of the climate center somewhat cumbersome. Is it possible to? Is it going to be? Boy, I don't even know how to ask the question. Is it going to be potentially hard for some school districts to fulfill this mandate? Therefore, actually, may cost them per pupil. It may end up costing them a lot of money. Or do you think it's something that can be easily put into place?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think your question's an excellent one. Senator Dibble and I and our organizations, we've worked really hard on getting this bill into the fashion that it's in, that people are comfortable with it. This particular provision continues to be a bit of a bone of contention, and I'd leave that to you. I did visit, I think my clients think the department has a wide variety of ways to encourage, how about that for a term, conduct, and that they would still have all of those at their means if they didn't have that provision there. That provision, particular provision, makes school superintendents nervous. I think that that isn't a provision that we would have any problem with if it left the bill. And I'm not exactly sure where Senator Dibble is, but I think at one point in the negotiations there was some discussion about would you create a private cause of action for people to sue school districts for violation of the statute, of the proposed statute. And we strongly objected to that. And as the negotiations went back and forth, this was kind of the compromise for that. But compromising with us, I mean, that's different than, you know, compromising with you folks and what you think is good policy and how that should be enforced. So I think that's something that, and certainly for this committee and for, to take a look at, what is interesting in that is if you look at it, there's a lot of other school policies that are very important, and the enforcement of the behavior is very important, that provision does not apply to. And so it does make sense for you to consider why would this be different than enforcement of attendance policies, enforcement of the hazing policy, you know, that's a separate part of this as well. So I think you're looking at that as important, and I would leave to the policymakers. But in terms of my organization's positions on getting this deal done, at some point you say, hey, this is a deal that we could live with, and that's where we are with this, because the rest of the stuff we really have had substantial accommodation on, you know, in terms of making this work in schools. Now, if you had superintendents here, I'm sure the soups would say, man, we do not like,
no doubt.
Yeah, we don't like that provision there. And so I don't think taking that provision out or leaving that provision in is going to change the results for any of the children and students that you're all looking at trying to help with this bill. Is that it? Fair enough, Senator?
Thank you. It's very fair. And I think it, thank you, Mr. Chair. It echoes the concerns that I've been getting from my superintendents in rural Minnesota as to the contents of some of the bill here. So I guess my question is to the chair and maybe to the author more so, that are we is Senator Dibble open to taking this section out? I guess it's been talked to. I mean, Senator, you've had this bill and you've carried it all over the right place, and I'm sure it's been asked before. So it's not totally clear that there's a problem here, but it sure sounds like there might be some problem with some of the administrators, very, very concerned about the potential of some pretty significant action against their school districts should they not comply with this mandate.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. So I do think this provision is kind of asks the question, how important do we believe there's a problem that needs to be solved? You know, some school districts are doing great on this stuff. Some schools are trying to do really well, but lack some of the knowledge, technical resources that they need to engage in some of the proven effective research best practices. And some are overtly hostile to the idea of making sure that all kids of all types are safe in going to school. And, you know, this is simply an enforcement mechanism. It's a tool that the commissioner has in a number of other arenas spelled out in this section of law. To my knowledge and understanding, it's never actually been invoked or used. Nevertheless, it's there. I can well imagine, you know, in some parts of the state and some school districts, if this is going to pass into law, there will be a pretty serious resistance. I mean, we see in the news the way some kids are treated, and with the tacit or overt support of the political leadership of that community. You know, those communities, I suspect, will resist making sure that kids from particular subgroups don't feel fully welcome and fully able to participate in their school community. You know, I don't think this section would be invoked, but I can well imagine that some schools will just simply not comply and say, what are you going to do about it? And so that's this is designed to address.
Senator Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if anybody brought this up. I sat on a school board, but I think one good reason to have a strong policy is because of potential lawsuits. We know how much Anoka Hennepin had to put in to try to defend themselves against the parents that brought them to federal court. And when I was on the school board, I went to a meeting in Chicago with the National Association of School Boards, and there was an expert there, national expert, that spoke on bullying, and she is also an attorney for school districts, and she said that the states really need a strong anti-bullying policy, and so do the school districts, in order to prevent lawsuits. If they have a good policy and they try to follow it, they're much less likely to have big lawsuits and to have to pay about large amounts of money. And what I saw also when I talked to other school districts in the state when I was on the school board is that a lot of them are already very close to being there. They're just not there yet to protect all categories of kids, and they oftentimes just don't know how to do this. But there are experts out there that can help them put their policies together, and it may end up being a lot cheaper in the long run than a lawsuit. And when right after I served on the school board, one of the ninth graders at one of my school districts left in the morning. He'd been being teased at school and went home and hung himself in the garage. And I think from after that experience, our school board policy got even stronger in the school district. And I think if we can prevent this, it's worth any dimes the school districts might have to spend on this.
Further discussion, questions, amendments on the legislation, motions? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, you and I have discussed this issue before, and I have to admit that in recent years, behavior of school kids seems to be becoming a little bit more antisocial when they relate to one another. I think every parent in the state has, if they have a child, especially in junior high or in senior high, they can tell of stories of how their sons or daughters have been improperly treated by other school kids, whether it's during a recess or whether it's in a classroom, in an unattended hallway. And this probably does require our attention to analyze what's really happening in our schools. And we probably have to ask the question, what's really happening in our parenting skills as well? How are we teaching our kids to relate to one another? I certainly can tell of stories of my own children coming home and having rather just plain bizarre behavior being having my own children in somewhat victimized by antisocial behavior or by behavior that one child wants to fit in with a group, and then the group turns on them. It actually can get to be rather vicious. And yet at the same time, I'm reading your bill, and I had the question about how it applies toward the non-public schools. And I know that we have a limited involvement as a state government with our schools. We want our schools to satisfy the same educational rigor and educational standards. But there is one issue on page 2 that I'm a little confused on. And if I could direct your attention to line 13, page 2, line 13. I haven't had the opportunity to review this bill, but at least in a committee recently. On line 13, we direct a non-public school to be encouraged to transmit to the commissioner its anti-bullying policy. And I'm just finding that encouraged is a word that I don't often see in state statute. Either we say it may, it must, it shall not. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could explain why that particular directive would be written the way it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Limmer. I'm glad you drew our attention to this section. At one time, it was the strong recommendation of the governor's task force. We can go into the governor's task force and who they are and what they did and why they came out with their recommendations. The short version is, you know, they took quite a bit of time to talk to quite a bit of experts from a lot of folks, as well as young people themselves and their parents and teachers, et cetera. The core value that came forward in the recommendation is that no young person should not feel safe and supported going to school, regardless of which school that was. And, of course, we know that public dollars do flow to non-public schools in different ways. We construe them differently. They attach to the child or whatever. But the fact of the matter is we provide a number of public dollars to support those educational endeavors, and that seemed to be important that, you know, public policies flow with, kind of our larger set of values kind of flow with those public dollars. So non-public schools were included, you know, in the scope and application of the bill at one time. That proved to be problematic. It raised significant heartburn on the part of a number of folks. And so we took them out. And, in fact, this language, I don't even want to say it was negotiated or a compromise, though it was, but was also articulated as desired by a lot of private schools, non-public schools, so that they could somehow feel a part of this larger effort. They're unified in their idea that this is something they want to pursue, and many are doing an excellent, excellent job. I have a couple private schools in my own district. And they wanted that opportunity in a public fashion to file their anti-bullying policies and the success of their anti-bullying prevention efforts. They, of course, could do that for themselves entirely in their promotional and marketing materials, of course. But, you know, they would, in this fashion, they would participate in the same way that other, you know, at their own option is encouraged in the way that anti-bullying policies are transmitted to the commissioner. In fact, you know, it would go at their own option. Of course, any public school could also, of course, communicate the summary data on their bullying incidents as well. But we don't have anything that talks about collection and dissemination of summary data for publics.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In answer, or listening to your answer, Senator Dibble, I'm finding that because it's more of an ambiguous directive, I personally don't think we really need this line in your bill. I think it takes a step, one step too far. non-public schools are exactly that. They, although we try and satisfy the educational requirements for public schools, we require them to have the same rigor and the same quality of education that public schools have, and oftentimes they exceed that. This directive, I think, just is a step too far. Mr. Chair, I would move that we strike lines 212 through 214.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I would speak against the motion and just say that this is language that was developed by a number of non-publics themselves, so I would say that it's not a directive. It's entirely voluntary. We are substituting our judgment for an idea that came from the non-publics themselves, something that they want. Not all do. I know some of the Catholic schools don't want this in there. That's fine. They don't have to participate.
Okay. We have Senator Limmer's motion in front of us. I know members are scattered around. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The wording encouraged there, if it stays in statute, tells me that if a year or two or three or 4 years go by and there is limited to none information coming from a non-public school, the intent then, I think, from just reading this, would be then to come back and change the wording to mandate. I agree with Senator Limmer.
We have Senator Limmer's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? We do have some members missing who have asked to be notified of amendments. And I'll just take this opportunity to let the committee know that we started about a half hour late. This committee is scheduled to end at 11, so we'll make up for that half hour. But then we have session and other meetings this afternoon. So we're going to finish this bill today or tonight, depending on what members would like to do. So I think we have a couple of other amendments. And once we get the folks here, we'll give them a minute or so, then I expect people will stay here until we finish this bill.
What is the statutory?
And finish the amendments on the bill. They better be here like right now.
Is this recess come back tonight?
Mr. Chair, how long do you intend to wait for the members to return?
Not long.
Two more members coming.
Not long.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you give me an idea, I'll time it. Make sure we follow the timer.
I'm going to give them about another 60 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Somebody. Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, if there's no further discussion, why don't we vote on this amendment and then keep moving on so we don't run into a session?
We're also missing the author of the bill, so.
Where'd he go? Senator, I know Senator
right.
Sieben is on her way.
Pardon?
Senator Sieben is on her way.
Well,
she should walk in any minute.
Any minute?
Well, she was right behind us, coming from the governor's office.
Okay. Well, stick around here then. All right. We have Senator Limmer's motion in front of us. I don't see Senator Sieben. Senator Limmer.
Just for the benefit of those who just came in, the amendment that I am presenting to the committee is to strike the words 2.12 through 2.14, and that is to remove the language that states that a non-public school is encouraged to transmit to the commissioner any anti-bullying policy, if any, and summary data of incidents.
And Mr. Chair.
Sir Dibble.
And I'll just mention I remembered when I stepped out for a second. As recently as just a few days ago, a representative of one of the private school councils told me in the hallway that language is still in, right? We like it. We want to keep it. So.
All right. We have Senator Limmer's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion fails.
Division, Mr. Chair.
Division called for. All those in favor of Senator Limmer's motion, if you could signify by raising your hand. What do we have? And for all those against, if you could raise your hand. On a vote of 9 to 11, the amendment fails. Let me just indicate to members who just came in what I mentioned. We started about a half hour late. The committee is scheduled to go to 11 o'clock. We'll go a half hour later. We have a brief floor session. We have a number of meetings this afternoon. We're going to finish the bill today or tonight. I would suggest to members we have other amendments. Don't leave. We're not going to be waiting 5 minutes for people to come back for amendments. Is there further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble, then, as a result of the last amendment vote, is it your opinion that this policy, if becoming law, would be applied equally to non-public schools? Is it your intention to make the anti-bullying bill, as you've written, to apply not only to public schools but to all non-public schools as well?
Thank you, Senator Limmer, Mr. Chair. The answer to your question, Senator Limmer, is no. I do not intend for the anti-bullying law requiring policies adopted by school districts or schools to apply to non-public schools.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
I know that on line 2.15, just the line below, it made a specific reference that this section does not apply to homeschools, but there's no reference to non-public schools. So in light of that, I'd like to introduce the A48 amendment.
Okay. Senator Limmer is moving the A48 amendment, if we could have that distributed. Senator Dibble, do you have the amendment?
I do. Mr. Chair, if I could just ask.
Senator Limmer, do you want to present your amendment?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble. In light of your last statement that this particular legislation would not apply to non-public schools, I'm hoping that this would be a friendly amendment, that we're just defining and clarifying, actually, the extent of your bill. The amendment, at least for the benefit of the public, is simply recognizing that the section does not only apply to homeschools, but it does not apply to a non-public school, and then with the appropriate statutory reference.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just confirm with Senate Counsel what 123.41 subdivision 9 is. I think this is probably a friendly amendment.
Mr. Bowder.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, the 123B.41 sub 9 reference is indeed the definition of a non-public school, and it is what it says is that non-public school means any school, church, or religious organization or homeschool wherein a resident of Minnesota may legally fulfill compulsory instruction requirements of law and is located within the state and meets the requirements of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, and goes on to say it does not mean a public school.
Great. Sure. Senator Dibble.
Yeah, this is an acceptable amendment. I think it's fine.
We have Senator Limmer's motion, the 848 amendment. All those, Senator Lori.
Mr. Chair, not to belabor the point, and I think it'd probably be okay, except that it does create a little bit of an inconsistency with the paragraph B there right ahead, actually applying to non-public schools and encouraging, and then we say except that we're not encouraging. I mean, there does appear to be an inconsistency in the drafting. I mean, do that,
Mr. Bowden.
So, Mr. Chairman, I put this together fairly quickly a few minutes ago. One thing you could do to clarify that is that where it says in the amendment, or a non-public school under Section 123B.41, before that you could put a clause in that says, with the exception of paragraph B, comma, or a non-public school, and that would clarify the encouragement does, in fact, apply to the extent that it does.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
This is the problem with senators attending law school.
Senator Limmer.
Well, Mr. Chair, if someone else would want to make that amendment, that's fine. But since I voted to take out the lines 12 through 14, I would not want to participate in that. But if someone else wants to modify my amendment with an amendment, that's their call.
Okay. I don't know if anybody wishes to do that.
I'd do that oral amendment as suggested by counsel to the A48
right.
amendment.
Mr. Bowden, then, can you tell us what we have in front of us?
So, Mr. Chairman, and I think...
Well, and I'm sorry, so Slimmer, are you then accepting? Senator Lori is making the motion.
No, I would not be accepting that.
So you'd want to vote on... So Senator Lori's moving language, you'd want to vote on that. Is that
that's
correct?
Right.
Okay, Mr. Bowden.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Lori's oral amendment to the A48 amendment would be on page 1, line 3, after or, insert, comma, with the exception of paragraph B, comma.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually going to withdraw my amendment. It's, you know, it's fine. If we're going to be inconsistent, whatever. If Senator Dibble wants to accept this amendment... It's fine. I mean, the encouragement is there in statute, and I think the intent would be clear.
All right. We have Senator Limmer's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with reference to this amendment, and Senator Lori made this reference to it being throughout the bill, maybe the question to Mr. Modern is it anywhere else in this bill? Is it referred to anywhere else? Now, this amendment was made up very quickly, as you said. What I'm wondering, without perusing through it real quickly, and being somebody that didn't go to law school, I wouldn't have the capabilities of being able to do that as quickly as some on this committee. But I would like to make sure that it is covered throughout the bill. I mean, if it's showing up here and there throughout the bill, that reference, then I think that needs to be dealt with.
Mr. Bowden.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the way this has been included within the bill now clarifies that the entirety of what is Section 2 in the bill would not apply to that the non-public school as it's defined in law. Section 2 runs all the way through page 7 of the third unofficial engrossment. And if you look at Section 3, there are other conforming references that would also, to 121A.031, which is what's created in Section 2. Again, those would not apply if that section by its own terms does not apply to a non-public school. So I think it's fairly clear this would remove the application of the bill to non-public schools.
Senator Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the amendment refers to non-public schools, but I look at subdivision D and it says a school-aged child who voluntarily participates in a public school activity. There's an inference that if someone who wants to do extracurricular activities with a public school who is from a non-public school system, they are now subject to the bill as it states. Am I correct in saying that?
Mr. Bowden.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, that is correct. To the extent there are activities that go outside the bounds of what the statutory definition of non-public school is, this bill would pick that up. Mr. Nauman might have some insight on exactly what those activities are, but I think that is commonly understood where there's involvement with a public school in a curricular or extracurricular activity. That definition is found elsewhere.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, this is an amendment that was adopted in the K-12 committee. That language was specifically drafted to not apply to public or non-public schools, but to apply to students that might not be public school students, and there's a difference. So it would apply to students that were enrolled in a non-public school, but it would not apply to the non-public school. It also would, and I made this point to Senator Dibble when the amendment was made, it also would apply to students that are not enrolled in either. They may be under age 7, or they may have dropped out, but yet they're participating in some of these extracurricular activities or summer classes or whatever the case might be. So it would apply to some of those students that are in public schools, but it wouldn't apply to the school itself.
All right, we have Senator Limmer's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Is there further discussion or amendment on the bill? Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an A-47 amendment.
Okay, if we can have that distributed.
Would you like me to speak to that as it's being distributed?
Well, let's wait till we have it in front of us, since it's of some length. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the benefit of the members and those in the audience that didn't have the privilege of sitting through the education committees, this is language. It's a delete all amendment. This is language from an alternative bill that was introduced by Senator Carla Nelson. The language is based off of a North Dakota anti-bullying law that is currently in place. Similar to the Anoka-Hennepin School District, North Dakota was coming under some pressure. I don't know that they actually got sued, but they were coming under some pressure from the federal government and, as a result, implemented a more robust anti-bullying law. This is based on the North Dakota law. The North Dakota law is highly rated as far as quality for anti-bullying by the Obama administration. And our own Attorney General, Lori Swanson, publicly stated that if and when Minnesota changes its bullying law, we should look at modeling something after the North Dakota law because it's effective. It does a good job. But most importantly, for this committee's purposes, this bill saves us $40 million. It essentially gets rid of the unfunded mandate. It leaves it at a local control, but it's not so proscriptive as the 14 or 15 pages that we see in front of us now. And essentially eliminates that unfunded mandate and would get rid of the $2 million cost to the general fund as well. So this is a based on a proven law that is highly rated by the Obama administration that was also exemplified or excuse me, extolled, lifted up by our state attorney general as something we should look at modeling our laws after and will save local schools based on our local impact note that we have $40 million every budget, and we'll save the state of Minnesota $2 million every budget. So I think this is a tremendous opportunity to save a lot of money for the taxpayers and be effective in our attempts to have a more robust anti-bullying effort, Mr. Chair.
And Senator, you know, I appreciate your comments. You've suggested on a comparative basis this is preferable, and you've cited the National Administration, the Attorney General. Did they offer comments comparing your amendment, the the North Dakota proposal, our statute versus what we have in front of us.
Mr. Chair, I was very careful in my wording. I did not say that this bill, this amendment, was rated. This is modeled after the same legislation that has been lifted up and rated by the Attorney General and by the National Administration. It's not verbatim, but it is extremely close.
But I'm assuming that they didn't have the opportunity to compare the North Dakota statute to what we have in front of us today.
Mr. Chair, I do not know that. I just know that the Obama administration has rated the North Dakota law very highly. This is not law yet, so they haven't, I presume, haven't rated what Senator Dibble's bill is. And the Attorney General, to my knowledge, has not spoken pro or con for Senator Dibble's bill, but did speak highly of the North Dakota law.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be shocked to know I resist the amendment. Couple things. I think I've never argued that schools should not spend any money responding to and addressing bullying. I've only said that they're already spending quite a bit in this arena, and we've provided them quite a bit of money in the past year. I don't know how Senator Meenow can say that this doesn't cost anything. I see a number of activities that schools have to do. Just by way of responding to the Attorney General comment, I'll just say that the Attorney General's office was very, very much involved in the crafting a significant amount of the language in House File, what is my House File number? 826. There are a lot of thoughts that are carried in House File 826 that come directly from our Attorney General. Attorney General introduced, promoted this North Dakota bill. This is well before, it's just an effort for her to get some thoughts around bullying out, and she never pursued passage of that bill. This was well before the governor's task force even ever met and came up with a set of ideas based on researched best practices. And finally, I'll just say that we've spent a tremendous amount of time, House File 826, working very cooperatively, very collaboratively with a whole bunch of stakeholders. And as you heard Mr. Aronson say, we have achieved a bill that's highly functional and works really well for those who run schools.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assuming we're coming to a vote pretty quickly here, I know Senator Miller did mention he wanted to vote on this, and he's in the hallway, so we could send someone out to go get him. And I will request a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Fine. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, Senator Dibble, you mentioned that the Attorney General was very involved in crafting your bill. Do you have personal knowledge? I mean, have you talked to her about this bill, and has the Attorney General endorsed and supported the bill that you have brought forward?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, members, no, I haven't spoken with her, and to my knowledge, she has not specifically endorsed the bill. but that being said, her staff certainly endorses major components because they crafted the language verbatim. I mean, we picked up some language that they brought to us verbatim, so they were involved in nailing down and buttoning up some of the details that we needed to do.
We have Senator Nino's motion on the 847 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, clerk will take the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bonoff.
No.
Champion.
No.
Dibble.
No.
Fishbach.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Latz. Limmer.
Aye.
Lori.
No.
Miller.
Yes.
Newman.
Pass.
Nino.
Yes.
Pappas.
No.
I'm busy laughing.
Peterson.
Aye.
Saxog.
No.
Sieben.
No.
Stump.
No.
Tomasoni.
No.
Westrom.
Yes.
Uyghur.
No.
Chair Cohen.
No.
Latz. Newman.
Yes.
a vote of 9 yes, 12 no, the amendment's defeated. Is there further discussion or amendments on the bill? Senator Nino.
Just one more, Mr. Chair. The A46 amendment, since we've not...
Okay, if we can have that distributed. Senator Nino, since this is just a deletion of Section 9, maybe you could explain. So the amendment itself is, we don't have language.
Mr. Chair, what the amendment does is eliminates the language that allows the commissioner to withhold education funding. The provision in the bill, I think, is problematic because there is no, there's no specified criteria for the commissioner to do that. There is no specified percentage. It could be any or all of school funding. If they're not, if the commissioner determined that a district was not fully complying with the requirements of this piece of legislation, there are no specified criteria. It's at the commissioner's sole discretion. There is no appeals process specified. There is no limitation on how much the commissioner could withhold. It just strikes me as a very problematic portion of the bill, Mr. Chair, and that's why I'm offering the amendment.
Sir Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll just repeat the thoughts I had earlier. This is an enforcement mechanism similar to some other provisions. I'm dubious about whether or not all those specifications were laid out. Folks would be more or less inclined to support this idea.
So this is
in that case, anyways. I think it's just kind of calls the question. School districts simply want to thumb their nose at this idea. What would compel them to act? This would allow at least the opportunity for the commissioner to come in and say, we really need you to do this, without them being able to say, so what? And that's the purpose of this provision.
And sir, I'm not the expert, but your amendment, which eliminates Section 9, then also eliminates everything else from statute. So, for instance, I'm not sure, and those of you who are education experts would know better than I, but you eliminate Sections 1 and 2 of Article 13 of the Constitution, which I think is, equitable funding to schools or something? So do you just eliminate the new language? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I just want to clarify that that would delete Section 9 out of this bill, not out of law.
Okay. All right. We have Sir Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe Senator Nino can help me with this, or someone else involved in education, but how do we resolve a dispute between a school district and the commissioner? I mean, does the commissioner just have the outright authority to withhold the funds prior to that dispute being resolved? Or how would that, and it's just an open question to the committee, how would that work?
Cordy's here. I can speak to this a little bit.
Okay. Ms. Corey.
Mr. Chair, members, Darren Cordy with the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm not an expert on administrative procedure, but my understanding is that the withholding of aid would be considered a final decision by the commissioner, which could be appealed to the Court of Appeals, see if it would be consistent with what the provisions in state law are.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Sir Newman.
Just a quick follow-up. So if... would the school districts have the ability or have available to them, in effect, some kind of a contested case hearing prior to the commissioner taking rather drastic action of withholding funds?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I don't believe that, or I see Mr. Nauman nodding. I said yes, so maybe I would defer to counsel on that matter.
Mr. Bowder.
So, Mr. Chairman, elsewhere in the statute that's being amended here in Subdivision 5, there's a provision that provides for hearing before the commissioner and provides for investigation. There's a hearing time in place. The board is given a notice. I'm just summarizing quickly for you. It requires a record to be made of all testimony. Looking at this and summarizing it, I don't know if I would define it as a contested case hearing under the provisions of Chapter 14, but there's a fair amount of process that's provided here.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bodern, just so that I understand, there is a process that would have to be followed whereby the school districts would have an opportunity to disagree with or contest the commissioner's position prior to the commissioner withholding the funds. Is that fair?
Mr. Bodern.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Newman, there is an extensive process. It requires notice, and what I'm looking at is I'm trying to determine whether a decision needs to be made, or rather whether the hearing needs to be completed before the penalty can be imposed. I believe that's correct, but I'm going to need a minute to verify that. It allows the commissioner must set a time for correcting the violation, and then says the time may allowed for correction may be extended by the commissioner if there's reasonable ground. Therefore, Senator Newman, I'll have to follow up with you to determine whether or not the decision needs to be final before the penalty can be imposed.
Thank you, Mr. Bodern. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. All right. We have Senator Nino's motion on the Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do support Senator Nino's motion. I do have concerns around giving the commissioner the authority to withhold funds in this way. You know, sometimes my school directs, when they disagree with the department, they come to me, and I orchestrate meetings between the department and the school district. And so I know there are conflicts that arise between the districts and the department, and so I think we do want to give our districts more latitude than less latitude when conflicts arise. And so I think putting something in law that uses money as the gating feature is just not something I support.
Sir Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to request a roll call vote, but a comment to clarify for Senator Newman and the interchange there with counsel. At the end of the day, there's this process. But at the end of the day, the commissioner is the judge, the jury, and the executioner. And if the school district thinks the commissioner didn't listen to their argument or had an agenda or whatever, anybody can sue anybody. And certainly the school can sue and go to court after the fact. But that's upside down, in my opinion. It should be the other way around. The commissioner should have to prove fault on the part of the district. The district should not have to prove innocence on their behalf to get their money back. And that second scenario is what this piece of legislation sets up, and that's why I'm asking to remove it.
Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, I oppose the motion. We have cases in statute now where this could be exercised for good reason, discrimination, et cetera. And it was only last session where we added some additional provisions where the commissioner may withhold, and that was if there's not satisfactory progress on world's best workforce objectives that we put on integration aid revenue, and I believe there was bipartisan support on those provisions, that there is a consequence financially if there's not adequate progress. So I would speak against it. And very fundamentally on something so important as safe and secure environment for students.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Wieger, I guess that bodes the question then. Sometimes we fix things that aren't broke. Can you tell me how many times this statute's been used to pull money from school districts for not behaving or not following the state guideline? That's not a real good word, I'm sorry.
Mr.
But
Chair.
For not following the...
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't know how many times. I believe it's a powerful tool and sends a message.
Okay. Ms. Hermanson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson with the Department of Ed, and I've been around for a while. It has been used very seldom. I think the last time that I recall, and we can verify this. I think it'd be more important to go back and verify this. I think it was for a violation related to teacher licensure, that there were teachers in the schools that were not licensed and they were asked to correct it and were not. I would point out that it's a they may withhold it, and the idea is to have them correct the violation. I don't know that there was permanently any money ever long-term withheld from school districts, but it was used as a means of enforcing statutes. But we can check and get back to you, but it's been some time.
So just to follow up, Mr. Chair, thank you for that. So there has been a time when the administration has allowed them to correct the action midstream, and if it's corrected, then the problem goes away. But only one instance that you can recall, and if that's the case, I would like to have that information, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, that's usually we work with the districts. We tell them what the violations are and ask them to remedy it. In my time, I have not recalled that there's been an administrative hearing in relation to that withholding of funds, but I do know that there have been instances where there's been correction requested and the districts have complied.
All right. We have Cernino's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion?
Chair, I'm fine for tonight.
Pardon?
I'm fine for coming back tonight if the members don't find this important enough to stay. And that's both sides. I don't care either way.
I got some shoveling, but I guess we could put that.
Actually, I don't. Mine is being taken care of in Alexandria, so I'm very fortunate.
All right. Well,
No.
Okay, well, I'm not sure. All right, Cernino, I'm sorry, Senator Fischbach? Yeah. Wait, I think we lose. Are we sure she's in the other way? All right, Cernino,
just ignore.
All right, you have we have Cernino's motion in front of us. All those in favor?
I did request
did you just for roll call? I'm sorry. All right, clerk will take the roll.
Anderson.
Yes.
Bonoff.
Yes.
Champion.
No.
Dibble.
No.
Fischbach.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Latz. Limmer.
Yes.
Laurie.
No.
Miller.
Yes.
Newman.
Yes.
Nino.
Yes.
Pappas.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Saxog.
No.
Sieben.
No.
Stumpf.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
No.
Westrum.
Yes.
Uyghur.
No.
Chair Cohen.
No.
Latz.
At a vote of 11 to 10, the amendment passes. Further discussion or amendments? Sir Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then in that case, I would move House File 826 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the floor.
Okay. Mr. Westrum.
Mr. Chair, maybe the author can update us. What is the path of this, assuming it goes to the floor or passes out of committee today? Maybe it won't, but assuming it does, this is not the same as the House bill, and then there would be potentially a conference committee, or else it would go back to the House and they would have to concur. Are those the two processes? And then I have a follow-up question.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weston, that's correct. We would vote for this on the floor of the Senate, and should the Senate act favorably, it would be sent to the House, where they would have the opportunity to concur or not concur. If they concur, then, of course, it would go to the governor for his signature. If they don't concur, then they would then have the opportunity to request a conference committee.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, just going through some of my emails on this bill as we're discussing it here also, and can you tell us what testimony was given in the prior committees on this? And one specific instance I recall reading indicated that there were several dozen folks that were signed up to testify on this, and only six people or so were allowed to testify, and that was the end of the input on this major of a bill. Is that an old email, or is that what happened?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, I think, I'll defer to Senator Torres Rey because I don't have any firsthand knowledge of who requested to testify, but I do recall that Senator Torres Rey did indicate that something like 75 people had signed up to testify at the Education Policy Committee hearing last week. Obviously, 75 did not testify.
How many, Mr. Chair? I was told about six. Is that about accurate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, it was more than six, but I don't recall how many.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I just... if some of that input is representative or close to accurate, I am concerned that we are not giving this bill the scrutiny, and I understand we deal with finance issues, but bad policies are going to have a financial effect on our local school districts as well. And I think this bill is not ready for prime time. I think we should vote no.
Further discussion, Senator Fischbach.
I request a roll call.
All right. We have Senator Dibble's motion that House File 826 has been to be recommended to pass. I'm sorry, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Sure. Mr. Chair, with your guidance, I would like some information maybe the committee would like as well. With the MMB report here of near $20 million cost for local governments, in fact, the fiscal note says that there is a local cost, so that clarifies that for us. But moving this bill forward, as Senator Westrom just said, without it being totally clarified as to where these dollars are coming from, I would think that this committee would certainly want to be part of the process of knowing how this is going to be funded locally. If it's going to be, if the school districts are going to be given the opportunity to levy more taxes on the taxpayers on property taxes, then I think we should just be very straightforward and say that this is a tax increase bill, and that's how we're going to fund it, and be straightforward with that. And I think the public needs to know that, and the school board certainly need to know that if that's the case. So I would like your opinion on that, and where do we go from that? If we have that responsibility, it seems like we do at least be able to answer to our constituents how this bill is going to be paid.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, the response is relatively simple. The committee's had a lengthy conversation about the bill, and certainly a very lengthy discussion about the MMB advisory local fiscal note. Obviously, Senator Fischbach had the note. We had it copied. I waited to have discussion on that till we had it in front of us. We spent a lot of time discussing the fiscal note. Second, as we've discussed, a local fiscal note is advisory. It's not to suggest there may not be a cost, but in terms of what we do with the state budget, we don't book local fiscal notes into the state budget. And obviously, you know that. I think we've had the discussion. Members can make a decision as to whether or not the discussion is satisfactory to them.
Thank you, Mr. If I could just follow up with one question then. Maybe Mr. Nauman can tell me. This is a different cost than what it was last year, so it's increased somewhat, the state portion. When we're talking about the portion of money that was appropriated last year but the bill wasn't passed, what is going to be the difference now between the money that's still sitting at the bottom line that will be available if it passes? Because we're talking about a bill that hasn't passed yet. What is the difference there? Is it much?
Mr. Nauman, in response, Senator Anderson, if you could indicate the cost and the process as to how we will be tracking this bill if it passes from this committee.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the fiscal note shows an advisory cost. At this point, this committee will not be booking any additional dollars associated with this bill unless there is a subsequent decision in the supplemental budget process to add additional appropriation to pay for some of the costs identified in this bill. So it would be, you know, in the parlance that we often use, it's assumed that the department could internalize some of those costs. And because there's a million dollars at the department for the Climate Center, that appropriation exists and is available to be used for the cost of the Climate Center.
So this one, we're not adding another $1 million. It's just whatever the additional cost is over the $1 million that's already there.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, if that was your straightforward question, I'll give you a straightforward answer. No, that we're not doing that associated with this bill.
Okay. On Senator Dibble's motion, there's been a request for roll call. Clerk will take the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bonoff.
Yes.
Champion.
Yes.
Dibble.
Yes.
Fishbach.
No.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Ingebrigtsen.
No.
Latz. Limmer.
Nope.
Flory.
Yes.
Miller.
No.
Newman.
No.
Nino.
No.
Pappas.
Yes.
Peterson.
No.
Saxog.
Yes.
Sieben.
Yes.
Stumpf.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
Yes.
Westrom.
No.
Uyghur.
Yes.
Chair Cohen.
Yes.
Latz.